It is with excitement that I get to share with you that the Leukemia Foundation has developed a new resource. This resource is called the Online Support Service, where it provides a wealth of services to assist a person living with blood cancer throughout their patient journey. So whether you're a patient who has just been diagnosed, in treatment or in survivorship, this service provides access to targeted learning modules, a suite of amazing services and online programs. And you also have the ability to chat with an experienced blood cancer support coordinator at just one click. It gives people a personalized and intuitive way to learn about important topics, including what to expect beyond treatment. This service is simple to use and is filled with content curated by the Leukemia Foundation for people with any type of blood cancer. It notably features a digital energy coach to help patients manage fatigue. So jump onto our website and look up our new and exciting product called the Online Blood Cancer Support Service.
You get to a point in life where you think you're in control of everything, and all of a sudden it gets taken out from underneath you.
I guess I kind of felt ripped off.
It's just living in the moment and just being adaptable to situations.
Give people voices to talk about, you know what, that phase is often the hardest, and be prepared for it because it's not what you think it will be.
Talking Blood Cancer, a podcast for those facing blood cancer by the Leukemia Foundation.
Find the best way forward using their own purpose that they have in their life and using their passions.
I've lost fear and doubt. Like, I no longer doubt myself in situations, and nothing scares me.
That gives you another goal to work towards and a reason to live.
I'm Kate Arkadiv, and I am the host of Talking Blood Cancer. This podcast shares the stories of the people we have connected with who have faced a blood cancer, so that you, our listeners, can gain insight, find purpose, and take inspiration. Before we get into today's episode, the Leukemia Foundation acknowledges the traditional owners of the land on which we share these stories. We recognise their continuing connection to land, sea and community as the first storytellers of this country. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present. This story may contain content that some listeners may find difficult and challenging. We encourage anyone listening to take care of their own mental health and well-being. The purpose of this podcast is to share real-life stories of people living with a blood cancer, and any discussion of medical treatments is not an endorsement. We encourage you to seek advice from your treatment team if you have any questions regarding your diagnosis, side effects, or treatment. If you would like to talk to someone, or even if you would like more information on our services or today's episode, please feel free to contact 1-800-620-420, and someone will be able to connect you with your local blood cancer support coordinator. So, let's get into today's episode. Today, Marianne interviews Damien Thompson, who, at the age of 23, was diagnosed with acute lymphoblastic leukemia in 2010. He underwent a donor-related autologous transplant, which unfortunately he did suffer then from severe GVHD. And a number of years post his bone marrow transplant, he then had to undergo a double lung transplant. He shares such tremendous pearls of wisdom of how he got through the challenges of his transplants. He speaks about remembering to celebrate the small wins, as those small wins turn into big gains. Damien made it his challenge not to let leukemia win, and he speaks about his determination to achieve this.
Good morning, Damien. I'm really excited that you've been able to join me here this morning for our podcast series Talking Blood Cancer. You know, I know from my own personal experiences walking alongside people living with a blood cancer that I've learned so many valuable lessons in life. And certainly I can say firsthand that I've learned some lovely lessons from you, Damien, over the years. So just to start the conversation, are you able to share a little bit about yourself? Where were you at diagnosis? What was happening for you, how you were diagnosed and where you were living, so that just people can have an idea of who you are and what was happening for you?
Yeah, yeah. So, well, good morning. Always great to catch up with you. I think my journey started when I was 23. So if I was to reflect back, pre-diagnosis, I was fit, healthy, playing sports, very active, and doing a lot of activities on the weekend. And so, leading into my diagnosis, I symptomatically had a lot of back pain, and related to my lumbar spine, which was actually a story in and of itself, because I had injured my back at work. So I associated the pain with the injury, and in doing that, I put the pain off and put the doctors off, thinking I was 6 foot tall and bulletproof, as you do, as young males do. And and it got to a point where I found myself in the shower at 3 o'clock in the morning with nothing but hot water running down my back to try and numb the pain.
Right, so severe pain.
Very severe pain. And at that point, it was actually, I remember the moment when I turned around to the shower head to turn the cold water off to get more hot water, and found there was no cold water. It was all hot and I was scalding my back. So it was
Damien.
It was at that point where I thought I had to go into hospital. And so I was in Townsville at the time, and it's where I was born and lived all my life. And I presented to the emergency ward there with pain, and they did a very quick blood test. And following the blood test, they hit me with morphine and said, I'm not going anywhere.
Wow.
I've got leukemia.
That must have been a very devastating moment for you and your family, Damien.
Yeah, it was surreal. It was surreal. So I often talk about the acceptance and the realization of your new reality, and sometimes that can take longer for others to accept that. I think for myself, it took a few days, but once the reality settled in, I very much narrowed my focus on, okay, what can I do to get better?
It's interesting, you know, some people who have experienced long periods of pain, like you've just mentioned, sometimes when they get to the diagnosis, there's an element of relief because it was quite extreme. It was an extreme event or extreme pain that they couldn't relate to any other thing in their life. So to have something that they could actually work with or have an understanding of, other patients have shared with me that this was quite, you know, it was a relief when they finally got the diagnosis. Did you feel that?
Yeah, I actually think you're right, and that's what helped with the accepting my new reality. Once I understood my leukemia, that's when the shift in perspective, at least for me, happened, and I narrowed my focus and really I was really driven to do everything I can to get better.
And quite, you know, one step at a time, but certainly takes a lot of determination, and I'm sure you were surrounded by a lot of support at the time.
Yes, very lucky. Family and friends are a big part of recovery.
Yep, absolutely.
And I was very lucky and fortunate. I had a lot of friend and family support. So I think during your worst of times, it's good to know that they have you back.
Absolutely. So, Damien, taking yourself back to that time, what year are we talking What year did this happen?
We're in 2010 now, and my diagnosis actually fell on Father's Day, so I'm a bit of a party pooper in that sense.
Next steps for you, Damien. So, you know, you're in the Townsville Hospital. It's Father's Day. You have your family and loved ones around you. What was the plan of action for treatment following that? What was, you know, what did they have in mind for you?
It was immediately decided that I would be going for a bone marrow transplant due to the aggressive nature of my leukemia. Mm-hmm. And so,
what type of leukemia was it?
It was ALL.
ALL, acute lymphocytic leukemia.
Mm-hmm. That's right. But I think having tried to tough it out didn't help with my diagnosis. Having let it go a bit longer than I should have. So
maybe words of wisdom are, if you do feel unusual pain, to actually get it seen to sooner rather than later.
Yeah, simple things like a blood test, I tell everybody.
Yes.
There's no harm in that.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
So
you were told you needed a transplant. What process did they do? You know, what happened next?
Well, I was very much focused on my 3 months of chemotherapy, first and foremost. But closer to the end of my 3 months, it was organised for me to go down to Brisbane,
mm-hmm.
to the Royal Brisbane and Women's Hospital, because at the time there was no facilities to house a bone marrow transplant at the Townsville Hospital. And so I was sent down, thankfully, after getting into remission and maintaining that remission, to Brisbane and housed by the wonderful Leukemia Foundation and all the brilliant staff there and all the support,
mm-hmm.
where I met yourself and a few others. And then steps were taken to basically facilitate the bone marrow transplant, and I had my bone marrow transplant on March 15th, so 3 days post my birthday.
Right. So March, 3 days post.
Yep.
So tell me, Damien, who was your donor?
It's my brother, my older brother.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So back then it was, I'm not sure what the matching HLA matching is like now, but it was 8 out of 8, considered very high.
Yep. Great.
So I was fortunate in that I had that option, and everything was ready to go. I just had to prepare myself and be as healthy as I could.
Mm-hmm. So in saying that, because it's often really, because you know yourself having been there, when you're embarking upon something as daunting as a transplant, what are the steps that you took to try and diffuse the anxiety associated with that process? And how did you said you prepared yourself. So what kind of things did you do as an individual to get yourself prepared for transplant?
Well, fundamentally, it's just narrowing your focus. Don't put thought into the things that you can't control, because it does you no good.
Mm-hmm.
And focus on the things that you can control. And in doing that, I set out to be at 1% better each day, no matter what that may be, physically, mentally, emotionally. And having done that, I'd set very small goals. So if I was feeling unwell, in order to build my confidence and gain that momentum, I would say, if I got out of bed 3 times yesterday, I'm going to set a goal of getting out of bed 4 times today.
Okay.
And
the simple things,
just very things. Very simple, small things, but collect the small wins and treat them as big wins. I think is very important, and I'm a big believer in being your own cheerleader.
Mm-hmm.
So once you once you do achieve the little things and the goals that you set, egg yourself on and congratulate yourself and see yourself as the winner, because again, collecting those wins does a tremendous amount for your mental health, and then your mental health affects your physical health.
I love that connection, Damien, because I don't, as you know, I totally believe in that connection of physical and mental and emotional well-being and health. But sometimes, as you may have experienced, it's very hard to take that first step. Do you have any pearls of wisdom that could possibly help shift and change someone who may be struggling with those small steps and taking them?
I do. And everyone has their own way of dealing with things, so I can only state what helped me. And I've had a lot of time to think and develop these mental tools, and I think primarily a shift in perspective. I had a lot of problems and I saw them as problems.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't doing me any good in seeing the problems, because there was a lot of problems, like okay. There are with diagnosis and treatment and side effects and
dealing with hard things to live with.
That's right. So I remember one day I sort of had enough of these problems. I'm going to focus on them as challenges. I'm not going to name them problems. They're going to be challenges. And in doing that, again, it narrowed my focus. It's all about narrowing your focus and just leaving your mind free of everything else and focusing on that next step. And having done that, I thought, what is my next step? And it could just be next bag of chemo.
Mm-hmm.
So I narrowed my focus on that, and I'm like, well, this is a challenge. How can I prepare for that challenge?
Mm-hmm.
And so I set out to diet or like I said, if I walked, say, 50 metres yesterday, I'd walk 60 metres today.
Okay.
And so, again, it's about setting those little, very small, achievable goals and then trying to be 1% better each day.
And celebrating them.
And celebrating.
Yeah. So very recognize. So your shift of perspective in recognizing what you named or labeled as problems, shifting that perspective and looking at them as challenges, but then building some, okay, well, how can I approach these? A way to approach them is to accept that some things you can't change, but what can you do in that moment? And what you chose to do in that moment is to challenge yourself to improve or, you know, invest in a better way of approaching that challenge and celebrated the achievement.
Well, that's right. You can turn away from your problems / challenges,
mm-hmm.
which is never good. It's never good, because then it's always in the back of your mind dominating your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
I think by turning forefront on to your challenges is always the best thing. In doing that, I saw my cancer as an opponent.
Okay.
And so I would prepare for my opponent like I would going into, say, the Olympics or a sporting match. And so mm-hmm. I set like a little training program for myself which would feed that focus and narrow that focus and obviously help in getting 1% better each day. It's just
post-transplant, Damien, just to, you know, extend on that thought, because some people may actually love that you saw your cancer as an opponent and may love to try and embrace that shift of focus from problem to challenge and building around how to approach that. Are you able to share, just so that, because some people may need an explanation of maybe one aspect of how you went about doing that, just to, you know, give them that opportunity to look at how it's done. You know, because sometimes when we're so locked into especially an adverse event in our lives, we may find ourselves not being able to see through the clouds, and we might need some examples to try and help us you know, to try and help us broaden our view, open our eyes, look at other ways. So are you able to extend on post-transplant maybe what a couple of the things that, you know, that you put in place on a day-to-day basis that actually found, that you found helped you to achieve and be where you are today?
Well, I'd write a list down so I remember these things. But it was only a handful of things, and each day might be different because you're approached with a different challenge, a different emotion each day. So you can refer to those things that help for that particular problem / challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I would do is I would reflect on my thoughts or where my attention was each hour of the day. And then I question that. I'm like, well, is that helpful, me thinking mm-hmm. about that? And did that help me? Is that going to help me? And so I think reflecting on those thoughts each hour of the day, you're able to push out any negatives and narrow your focus towards the positives.
That's a good idea, and that is a good approach. And it's funny, well, it's not funny, but one of the other previous people that I did actually speak with on this podcast series actually did find themselves looking at thought patterns and saying, well, if I did think like this, would it help? And often if you ask yourself out loud, would it help? I think that's that defining moment when you think, oh, actually, no, it wouldn't.
That's but exactly right. Well, that's a power in and of itself, right? If you say it out loud and it becomes, mm-hmm. You're bringing it to reality. It's not just a thought. So one of the things I was taught growing up through sports, through go-kart racing and through other bits and pieces was when things got tough, just say out loud, you can.
Mm-hmm.
You can. And so when I felt like I couldn't do something, I would just say, you can, until I actually did it. And they were at the very hardest moments. Mm-hmm. Very, very darkest moments. And so I'm talking about just getting up, not out of bed, just getting up was a challenge.
Yeah.
But I'd only give myself 5 seconds to think about it. Otherwise, there's a little mental trick that I believe in, that if you give your brain more than 5 seconds, it'll talk you out of it. And so
5 seconds isn't long.
No, your brain doesn't need much to convince your body mm-hmm, to relax true. And chill out and not do something. So, that you can got me out of bed, that you can got me stepping and going to the toilet myself and little things like this. And so I'd actually name each step you and can. Mm-hmm. And
did anybody help you process your thinking this way, or is it something that you created for yourself, something that, you know, whether it be your upbringing and how you face challenges and you know, different things in your past and growing up years that shaped you to the person that you are, or was there an outside person who helped you with that, accepting the things you cannot change but making a commitment to the day-to-day and challenges and self-talk?
That's interesting you bring that up, because I'm strange in this way that I never...
Can we reframe that word, strange? Unique.
Yeah, I'm unique in a way that speaking about the problems or challenges didn't help, mm-hmm. or getting, how can I put it, engaging in conversation on how someone else would approach their problems enlightened me, but at the end of the day, I had to formulate my own tools. And so I think my personality really directed me towards a mindset that, okay, why, not the question why, actually, I never use why. I'm just like, the leukemia, okay, you're coming at me, I'm going to come at you. And so I don't know what that is, but it was a trigger within me that really sparked a fire.
Mm-hmm.
And I was not going to let it win.
I love that. That's determination. Yeah. Damien, when you were, you know, I've known you over a number of years, and you have faced some enormous challenges. What did you absorb yourself in to get you through the tough times? I know you challenged yourself, but what did you absorb yourself in to just find that comfortable space to accept where you're at?
I set out to control time because time slows down significantly when you're sick. And so I focused on the next minute, the next hour, or just the day, depending on how sick I was. And being social for me was the way that I would handle my illness, I suppose, or the way I felt. And so just getting on the phone and having a chat to friends, or engaging with the hospital staff and nurses. I was known to be a bit of a prankster and a bit of a joker, and so I played on that a bit and created a fun atmosphere, I think, is important where you can, but at the same time, when you're not well, you're respected and
we're surrendering to the moment.
Yeah, that's right. Mm. I mean, listen to your body.
Mm-hmm.
It will tell you what to do.
Yeah. And
don't fight it. Just work with it.
Work with it. And when the body says to rest, you rest.
Exactly.
That's and acceptance right. is, you know, quite comforting in that moment, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yep.
So following on from that transplant period and you making those steps day by day, minute by minute, hour by hour, how has life looked for you post that 2010 transplant?
Well, actually, I've had challenges since then, starting with graft-versus-host disease.
Yes.
So nothing has been easy. It's probably a very light word. It's been very difficult. Mm. In that the graft-versus-host disease I had acutely was very, very bad in the gut, in the skin, and I looked like a bit of a burns victim at one stage. But thankfully, resorting to those tools and focusing on the 1%, I overcome that to the surprise of many doctors, actually. And so recovering from the acute GVHD, I was sent home to Townsville, thinking that the recovery would continue. But at the 12-month mark, a lot of patients are taken off their immunosuppressant medications, and at that time my GVHD returned.
Okay.
In the liver and the lungs.
Okay. Confronted with more adversity.
Mm. Yeah, and we were able to control it in the liver, but the lungs, it caused a lot of problems for the next 5-6 years, to the point where I had to have a double lung transplant.
Wow, a double lung transplant. So those 5 or 6 years, you would have endured quite chronic health problems.
Absolutely. Very, very hard years. Majority of them spent in hospital or in inside. So, it's a long road for some, but I'm very grateful that I had a fantastic team of doctors and support network, really, really fortunate, so that I was able to focus on myself.
I love that you use the word grateful, Damien, because I can't even begin to imagine having had a bone marrow transplant and then a double lung transplant, how that would leave a person. You know, they're two, when you've mentioned earlier problems and you've shifted that focus to see them as challenges, that takes good inner strength to actually focus things that way. So I admire you that you can, you must have an enormous ability and mindset to be able to choose to focus your thoughts differently.
Well, it's hard. Everything has to be worked at, but
yes,
fundamentally, I believe it comes down to a crossroad. You can mm-hmm. focus your attention, go left towards the negatives,
mm-hmm.
or you can focus your attention right toward the positives.
Yep.
It comes down to one question, yes or no. Mm-hmm. Will I focus on the negatives or will I focus on the positives? And you need to work at that. You need to work at that. Mm-hmm. But that's where reflecting on your attention and thoughts each hour of the day helps.
Yep, absolutely. So during that time when you were shifting that, you know, that focus towards the positives, what are some of the tools that you used to help you keep that focus? Were you someone who used visualization? What tools did you use?
Yeah, that's a very good point too, I think. I project myself to my happy place and I would I'd never let go of that thought. Always believe that someday I would be there. Oh, that's fishing and camping in the WA coastline. Very specific. Very specific.
But that's important. I think it neat because that's really important, that specific visualization of what you look like, where you are, what you smell, all those five senses interrelated, what you can touch, see, smell, hear, taste.
That's right. Mm. Yep. And secondly is I'd had a lot of pain associated with my treatments and condition. And in dealing with the pain, in a funny way, I'd be thankful for it because I was still alive. And in doing that, it reduced my pain. So a little mental trick I have here I'll share with everyone is that so my hips, I had avascular necrosis and the femoral heads had collapsed. So I was walking around in excruciating pain, but I'd be thankful for that pain in a funny way that I could actually feel and touch. And in doing that, I would redirect my feeling towards, say, my toe or a funny part of a different part of my body which wasn't hurting.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing that, temporarily forget about my pain.
Right.
And it was constantly doing that really helped me get through.
You mentioned that you, in your recovery, you narrowed your focus, and how you've placed a lot of the beauty of of the choices that you've made and the skills that you have and the mindset that you have, that you now have a mission to help other people who, face different challenges in their lives. Are you able to share, how you've gone about doing that, how you want to make a difference in that area?
Yeah, so what I found is that I've been helped for so long.
Mm-hmm.
I really wanted to give back and have that sense of feeling for helping others, which mm-hmm. really is one of the best feelings that you can get. And so using my experience, I found that I can do that in many ways. Primarily, the biggest impact I think I can have is by introducing virtual reality into hospital mental health care. And there's a story there. Over my 10 years, I've had a lot of hospital admissions and isolation and environmental stress. From the machines going off constant activity within the hospital or being woken up different stages or just very small.
That's disruption.
Yeah, very, very small things that make a a huge impact. So what I wanted to do, and I couldn't at the time because most of the time I was either neutropenic or my immune system was very, very suppressed, it would be risky to leave the hospital at any stage. And so I turned to virtual reality for an escape.
Okay.
And funnily enough, when I started using it, I wasn't getting a lot of sleep, and that caused anxiety and stress and increased mm-hmm. levels of that. And so using the virtual reality, I was getting more sleep and I was feeling better, and my energy levels were rising. And so I just did little tests with the nurse when they came around with the blood pressure and heart rate monitor and things like this, and noticed that after using the VR as opposed to not, my heart rate, blood pressure were down.
So when you say virtual reality, can you just share what that looked like? What did that look like for you in a hospital setting?
So
or even at home?
So what it is, it's an Oculus headset or goggles that you can purchase, and within that I would reflect or escape or transport myself is probably the best word, to the environment that I wanted to be in. For example, similar to the thought or maintaining that thought of my happy place,
yeah,
and holding that thought. So I created that happy place virtually. So I'd go to beaches and sit on beaches and listen to the ocean and the seagulls and the birds and just relax. And I'm big into space, so I'd go into space, into a space pod, and just float around the Earth as though you're in the space station, and just look down and hear the ambient noises and all the calming effects, and even just for distractions, watching a movie, feeling like you're in the cinemas. So it's all about taking you away, distracting you from the reality of your situation temporarily for that mental reset. It does a huge amount for you.
I love that mental reset, and you know how ingenious, really, because when you do exactly as you just explained, when you are immersed in a hospital setting, in a clinical ward, or even just when you're absorbed in your own negative head talk, to provide an environment that actually transports you, I love that word, transports you to a different environment. Well, other thoughts can come into play, can't they?
Exactly. Very, very simple concept, but very, very powerful.
Yes. And, yeah. So,
So that led to a way that, or a focus that I could give myself, a goal rather, to understand how I can provide that for other patients. I should say that, first time I've used my virtual reality talking to other patients on the ward and lending them the VR headset, I barely got a go myself. and it was at that point I thought, well, you know, it's obviously having a great impact on not just myself but others, and that solidified my my thoughts on, okay, well, let's set out to provide this for other patients. And in doing that, 2019, I started Chimera Legacy Foundation. We've got programs launching at the Townsville Hospital and one at the Royal Brisbane Women's Hospital, where I had my bone marrow transplant, and hopefully progress to the Children's Hospital.
So are you targeting a certain age group? You know, are you do you have target groups in mind? Or
it's a very... So the VR's for everybody. The adoption, I think, starts with the generations that are familiar with this technology. Mm-hmm. And then it's about proving the concept, starting with young teens through to 30-year-olds and people like myself. And so once that's proven, we can very much understand what applications work best for each age group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And take it further.
Mm-hmm. The need in you to give back, I think, is just beautiful. I think sometimes life experience do shape us into the individual that we are, and certainly knowing you and the challenges that you have faced and endured and come through the other end, you've made a choice around how you spend time. How we spend time is really important too.
Absolutely.
You know, like you say, do we go negative or do we go positive? It's nice to look at things that bring you joy, which is a part of going positive. However, it's a normal human emotion to feel negative.
At that point, something I missed out, which is very important,
mm-hmm.
is one thing I noticed in patients, and some would focus on what their friends, what their healthy friends are doing,
mm-hmm.
and therefore give them a sense of missing out on life.
Yeah. Well, it's a loss, I guess, on how they think, lost opportunities in a way.
Well, yes, but then it comes to perspective, right? It's the acceptance. You are not like them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, your new reality is that you are sick. You need to compare yourself to others in your situation, and or worse. And so I'd do that. I think it didn't take me long to do that, actually. When I was first diagnosed, I would be very grateful that I was diagnosed in Australia, for example, where I had the greatest and latest treatments, had the professional backing, I had the facilities, a warm, comfortable bed, even to the point where I was getting food, whereas people say in Africa or something, what would that comparison look like? What if I was diagnosed over there? And I only use that as an example, but that did a lot of good for me.
Yeah, the importance of your gratitude diary, things that you need to be grateful for. And, you know, in those darkest moments, which I'm sure most patients have a dark moment because that just makes us human. But in that moment, breaking it down and recognizing what good is around you and placing your focus on that, being grateful for, as you say, the treatment that's available to you, the support that's surrounding you, that, you know, all of those littler things that can, you know, that you're in a good position to move forward.
Yep.
Not easily achieved, though, is it?
No, it's not. That's why you need to develop your own mental tools, and hopefully by sharing mine, can help others to prepare and develop their own mental tools. It does take work.
Yep. So just just because we've been chatting for quite some time now, and you know, just to kind of summarize, what are the key messages that you think is really valuable for, you know, those that are listening here this morning? What would you say are the key things that you'd like to impart or give suggestions to those facing diagnosis, transplant, and moving on from treatment?
I think you need to create your own little world,
mm-hmm.
And forget the world you were in and adopt to the new world that you are in, I think. And you can be the owner of that world, which can be exciting and fun and different. And it does get back to narrowing that focus. I'm a firm believer in that. Projecting yourself one day to your happy place and holding on to that thought. And perspective, turning those problems into challenges. You do not have problems. Mm-hmm. You've only got challenges. Cheerleader. Be your own cheerleader.
Mm.
Reward yourself for every little win.
They're lovely messages, Damien. You know, thank you for your time here this morning. And certainly I will add there that virtual reality, immerse yourself in something that brings you joy. Absolutely. Your visualization of what happens within is so important in your how it affects you emotionally. So you've done some, your focus is wonderful. You continue to support others whilst, you know, facing your facing your problems as challenges. You're a remarkable person, and I have learnt a lot from you, Damien, and I thank you for sharing this time with me this morning.
Thank you, of course. It's been great.
And that brings us to the end of today's episode. We hope that you found it helpful in some way. If you would like more information on today's show or our services, please feel free to contact 1-800-620-420, and someone will be able to connect you with your local blood cancer support coordinator. Also, if you haven't already, don't forget to subscribe, share, or even give us a rating on your podcast app. Thank you for tuning in today. I'm Kate Arkadiff, and you've been listening to the Leukemia Foundation's podcast, Talking Blood Cancer.